Real life. Superpowers.
We are very, very engaged with the business and with the founders. So the dynamics between them and us is crucial. And, you know, maybe they can fake it in the first meeting or the second, but if we are with them on a weekly basis, they can't hide it. So this is a crucial thing that I think the dynamic between founders is critical.
Welcome to Real Life Superpowers, where we dive into the minds of industry leaders, disruptors, and innovators shaping the future. In this episode, Ronen Menipaz and I, Noah Eshed, sit down with Lior Segal, co-founder and managing partner at Horizon Capital, a sector-agnostic fund backing Israeli founders at the pre-seed and seed stages. Horizon has built an impressive portfolio with companies like Verbit reaching unicorn status and multiple successful exits, including Own Backup, NanoRep, and Blue Ribbon. Before becoming an investor, Lior had a hands-on journey in the tech world, leading data matching solutions as CEO until its acquisition by SafeCharge, where he continued as VP of Gaming Innovation. He also played a key role in global payment strategy at TSG, a Nasdaq-listed company. Let's jump in.
Real life.
Superpowers. Superpowers.
Lior, welcome to Real Life Superpowers.
Hey, Leo.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What's keeping you busy these days?
Wow. We are in a crucial moment in our fund life cycle. We are at the end of Fund 3. So we have a few very, very short a runway to invest in another company or two, and we are looking forward to start our fourth fund, which is exciting, which is actually, you know, like any other entrepreneur or opening a startup, you need to go back to your investors and ask for more money.
Interesting. I've never heard a VC manager talk about the VC as an entrepreneurial venture in itself.
Yeah, it's you know, if you look at what we are doing or look at our journey, we actually started 12 years ago. Me and my high school buddy. Yeah, we know each other from the age of 12. We met at junior high and clicked immediately. You just need a round ball and two sporty guys, and that's it. We are a buddy for life. So we know each other from very, very early age. And
what round ball was it? What sport was it?
Basketball.
Okay.
Is there any other sport?
Apparently not. My bad.
Yeah. So we met each other in junior high in a sport division, and from there we just friends for till this day. We are friends is more important than business partners, and we keep it that way. Friend first and business partner after.
That there's actually a lot to unpack there, because we tend to speak with, we spoke with several business partners who were friends before. And I think Ronen has this theory that those are the businesses that work best. And I believe that it's a problem to work with friends unless it's clear that the business comes first when you get to an intersection. So you're saying the friendship is above the business?
I think, at the bottom of this relationship, there is trust, right? You must trust your business partner with anything. And I think because we have a very, very long background, we put our friendship first. So I don't think, and again, when we started this journey, we decided that we are not going to jeopardize this friendship. It's more important. And only when we decided that we have enough background to make sure that we will overcome any challenge, I wouldn't say a problem, but a challenge for sure, because there will be and there are obstacles in the way in terms of how we see the business grow or a specific decision about a specific company. But we, again, we keep it very, very professional. And I think this is the main goal behind it. We're not jeopardizing anything. Even if we have issues, professional issues, it's not going to damage our relationship.
Let me just correct you. The problem is what I say is not working with friends. It's working with people. So they're just by chance maybe your friends. The thing is, you can trust people, but the problem is the circumstances. So it's how you beat the circumstances with those people, because that's what's changed. Now, when you say friendship, like when you say friendship is over the business. So what's like the three like biggest rules that have to be made to respect that part, that idealism? Like what backs that up? What's the three big no's or yeses?
So I think that the main thing is that, you know, at the office, we are professional, right? We have a dynamic of very good friends, even in meetings. So the dynamic is very, very unique, maybe. And because we know each other, I know in advance what Jacob is going to say, and you know exactly how I think, and we're trying to exploit it, right? We have strengths and weaknesses of which we know. So we are trying to support each other. So the first one would be at the office, be professional. Second one would probably be on we are not in the office when we are with friends. Let's be friends. Work doesn't have to penetrate this area. So we are splitting it. We just had a couple of months ago a trip to the Philippines with a bunch of friends from high school. And we went like 3 weeks, no work, just friends. 10 guys from high school. You are getting back to high school. You think like 18 again, and we managed to really put the wall in between, and it's not jeopardizing anything. So I think that those two rules keeps us going. And again, because we are friends, we know that we have the same North Star. We want this business to make to be successful, so nothing is going to damage it. We have the agenda. We agree on everything in advance. Everything is fixable. Everything is on the table. We're not hiding anything. We're not taking any kind of bad feeling home. If there is anything that we need to discuss, we open it on the table and discuss it. So these are the three rules that kind of keep us going.
Perhaps you also know how to resolve things when you do disagree or when you do argue, because I don't believe that you don't. So I suppose you're good at overcoming that as well.
Of course, again, we don't agree on everything, because it will be very boring, right? There are, again, I think that the main thing is to make sure that we understand what the strengths and weaknesses of each of us. So I'm trying to focus on what I'm best at and give Jacob the floor when he where he can excel, and vice versa. And we're not criticizing our qualities, right? We know each other for so long, and so we can't hide anything. We know each other so good, so there's nothing fake here. And if there is a criticism around about any specific, I don't know, action that we had to do and didn't, or a decision we need to take and didn't, or we put it on the table. We can't hide just because the friendship is there.
And do you also prefer to invest in founders who have a previous background, know each other, preferably friends?
I think that it's not friends, but I think the dynamic between founders is very crucial. And we tend to put it as one of the key issues that we are discussing, the dynamics between the founders. We know for sure that there will be obstacles and challenges, some personal, some business, and some because of the different culture of doing business or the background. We know, and they will need to face it. So I think that this is something that because our background, we tend to identify very quickly. We basically trying to challenge the founders in points that we think are very crucial, and see different approaches, and we see the, you know, even looks between founders during a meeting, right? when a founder is taking over or want to say something that, and you see on the face that maybe the other founders that are not really agreeing with, you need to see it. I think that there are different ways that we work with founders. We are very engaged with the day to day. It's not putting money and move away and waiting for the board meeting to see the results. We are very, very there for them and making sure that the engagement with the founder is it's very tight at the beginning, at least. We have kind of an evolver program that during the first 12 months, we are very, very engaged with the business and with the founder. So the dynamics between them and us is crucial. And, you know, maybe they can fake it in the first meeting or the second, but if we are with them on a weekly basis, they can't hide it. So this is a crucial thing that I think the dynamic between founders is critical. A friendship can help and challenge as well, but we can see it. You can see the how they complement each other and make sure that they focus on what they need to focus. So friendship at the core of a startup is nice to see.
We're excited to be collaborating with the Israeli website CTech, owned by Kalkalist, Israel's leading business newspaper. CTech is the gateway of the Israeli high tech to the tech world and vice versa. If you're not already a regular reader, we strongly recommend that you check out kalkalistech.com, kalkalistech.com, to stay up to date on all high impact stories from the Israeli tech scene.
Okay, so a lot of VCs like that there's a previous success with between founders, because that already means that they have good chemistry because they, you know, went through that run. I have a question for you and your partner. When you played basketball, was there success involved?
Of course. We are very competitive.
So what kind of success did you see there?
I think the success is that, you know, we are not waiving any kind of values, even on the court, right? We are both competitive. And even if I win or Jacob wins, or, you know, basketball is a team sport, right? So we were playing in the same team. And, you know, when Jacob is better than me in a specific game, I cheer and I congratulate him. But I'm not, you know, trying to look at what I did, which was less than what his contribution to the game, right? And we play against each other. And when we play against each other, you know, no rules, right? We need to win this. And I think the combination of supporting and the competition, and again, being in a team with other members as well, help us significantly to look at this business, right? A basketball team, you need to support your team members. You are not always in your best performance. So you need to find a way to support them, even if you are not doing your best today, right? I can come to a meeting and, you know, blow it just because I had something before, or I am not focused, and Jacob can come and basically wave it. I think this is the beauty of this kind of relationship.
And did you and Jacob, back on those days on the court, did you have shared dreams? Were you envisioning a future where you worked together? What were you talking about as the dream path that you have in your head?
I think that we always had it in our head, but never really tried to explore it till later on in our career. We studied computer science in high school. We both did the same course, and I decided very early that I'm not going to write code anymore in my life. It felt boring and very technical, and I didn't see it as my future. And Jacob was the opposite. He found beauty in development and coding. He did it even when we were in high school. He developed different programs. We had this very early stage computers back in the 90s. He was fascinated by it. And this is what he pursued after the army. I went the other way to business. I'm a lawyer, and I did my law degree and a business degree simultaneously. And we basically went different ways in our careers. We kept a friendship, but we didn't. I did business. Jacob did more development and roles. And we ended up basically doing the same. So after 15 years in the industry, in the operational world, we basically did the same. We helped startups building or exploring or growing on our platform. So I did it from the business side, Jacob did it on the development side. And then when we are around 40, we decided that we want to do something together. We actually debated what we're going to do. That's building a new startup, a new project or a product that we think that can excel, or went the other way. Let's harness all the info, our background from the operational world, and build a VC, a micro VC that we can basically deploy our background and our career journey into helping new startups that we did in the past in the companies that we worked in. And it was like a new startup, right? We now need to go to investors and educate them that we can do something we didn't do before. We never invest in a company. We were helping companies from the very comfortable chair of the corporate world. Gave them opportunity, gave them support, but we didn't back the team.
But wait. You just tapped into something. You were in the comfortable seat of the corporate world, both of you. So let's talk about you for a second. You took that seat for several years, and it wasn't a coincidence, right? Like it was something that you created. So why did you take that seat in the first place, and then what changed?
I think that my journey, I basically started as a lawyer, and very early understood this is not for me. My goal is not to be a partner in a big law firm because you, at the early age when I started being a lawyer, I saw many interesting ventures, helping them to set up the legal framework. And when everything is ready, you kind of leave them, right? You are set to go. And the interesting stuff happens after that. And I felt like I'm building the infrastructure, but I don't have any visibility to the next step. And this is what I wanted to do. So I kind of doing the opposite of the natural path, right? I decided, I'm going to the business. And I've actually found a unique opportunity in gaming and fintech, trying to I built something in a very, very complicated world, legal-wise and financial-wise, and it was very interesting. It opened a new spectrum for me. And so I started in a startup and then building a new product, ending up opening a service company that basically helped companies helping merchants in that area, trying to reconcile all this legal framework and financial.
Just to clarify, that means that you tried to the regulation of blockchain in gaming, like what exactly was it?
It was the early 2003, I think, starting to helping gaming operators to have a technical platform that can support their gaming activity, but behind the scene you need to operate a financial license to process funds in and out all across the world in different currencies. It wasn't blockchain, it was pure payment processing. And building it in a legal framework that work and you can basically guard the activity of users and merchants to make sure that everybody gets their money at the end of the day was very, very unique. There were challenges on the legal side, making sure that we are compliant with any.
Just because it was like really new, like just because the industry was new?
It was new. It was under license. So you need to understand, you build your own license, right? You need to decide what is right and what is wrong. And we decided that we are going to be like a bank, right? We are going to serve and guard the users, making sure that their funds are secured, regardless the merchant ambitions or whatever. And in unregulated market, it's kind of crucial point to be in, because you are responsible to process funds You need to make sure it's compliant. You need to make sure that the funds are there and nobody can touch it unless it should. So it was kind of a very, very creative way to be. So I kind of used my legal background and financial background into this new venture, and it was amazing. And then basically I built up a company that basically did it from the side as a third party, reconciling all these setups and processing, ending up selling it to pre-IPO SafeCharge back then and joining the journey on as a VP in an enterprise public company. So it was a kind of a journey from an early stage startup, my own company, and then sell it to a pre-IPO company and join them after the IPO. So this comfortable chair basically gave me the ability to first look at the journey from a startup to an IPO listed company, from a young team to a very, let's say, structured corporate America kind of company that everything needs to be set properly. And even then, I realized that to make sure that we will be successful, we need to help new startup, for sure, in the payment industry, in the fintech industry. If they are growing, we will grow with them, right? If they have a new a solution to a difficult problem that we faced in the in this very complicated arena, if we give them the option to solve an issue we have, they will grow, and then we will grow. And with this kind of mentality, we went back and said, you know what? We know how to identify good solution, good product, good opportunity that managed to help the corporate world that we were part of, right? We identified the right teams. We gave them the opportunity to join our platform. If we work with them to find a product market fit. And once we did it, they helped us to grow. And we saw it on so many, you know, in Infinix, it was very clear. You find a solution, you put it on the platform, give them the option to grow, give them the ability to see how their solution is working on a big platform. And from there, they basically grow very, very fast. So you see a small team getting the opportunity, giving a solving the issue, growing very, very fast. And then, you know, they have their own journey. They went from a small team to a corporate, a listed company, or being very, very big, or being sold to one of the big enterprises. So this kind of a mentality we try to deploy here. We will, this was the notion. We are able to find good teams. We know exactly, or we think that we know exactly how to bring them into a product market fit trajectory and help them to get there. Being very, very focused, very, very engaged in the company at the beginning. And this is how we started.
What do you mean focused in the beginning?
We see from, you know, we see around 300 to 400 companies a year. We invest in 2 to 3 companies. And one of the key items that we find very crucial to a team at the beginning, you keep in mind that we are a very early stage pre-seed seed company, agnostic to the industry, less agnostic to the business model. So we realize that the teams that we are see that are very focused on the target. We need to bring them from pre-seed seed to A round. They need to understand that they are looking at a very specific period in their life cycle. And they need to build the KPIs and the plan to make sure that the funds that we are going to invest into the company will bring them to the next round. So focus is on, you need to keep your eyes on the ball, back to basketball. You need to make sure that you know exactly what the plan is. You know to identify what is the revenue we expect from an A round or the next investor will expect, what number of users, what kind of engagement KPIs, what kind of product market fit level you need to reach. So it's very nice to think, you know, 5 or 10 years ahead in this world when everything can blow up tomorrow morning, you can't really do it. You need to have a great vision, but you need to be very focused. You need to make sure that you are not distracted from opportunities that might look very good and very, very shiny, but they can distract you from your journey.
So how involved are you in the beginning? Like,
very.
Are you like?
Very. I think
like
that
active physicians?
We are seeing the companies on a weekly basis. Our phone is, there for anything, really anything. If it can go from understanding the market, from understanding the ICP, a new hiring that they need to do, right? Three founders with, two, three developers need the next hire. Who is it going to be? It's going to be the sales guy. It's going to be the biz dev guy. It's going to be the market guy. We are trying to put on the table any kind of question that they have and make sure that this decision is there. It's not ours, but we need to make sure that they understand the implication, right? If we are going to, do we hire a VP sales now or a director of sales or an account executive? That's going to help you to get, they need to understand exactly who is the right person for the right job in this focus period. And so we are trying to be very engaged in terms of sometimes a tactical decision that's going to implicate the strategy, but making sure that they understand everything. So they understand the implication of every decision, how we are going to grow the marketing budget, what are the KPIs we need to look, what is the CAC unit economics that they need to look at. It's a very, very tricky period to be in, right? They have limited money, a limited team, and so we are trying to help them where they need assistance. And it's always around those business marketing, product market fit, understanding the ICP, trying to build the management team or at least the seed, and trying to kind of stabilize this very, very tricky period.
Wouldn't your life be easier if you focused on fintech instead of being sector agnostic?
So we thought about it as well. What kind of micro VC we will be? Do we have... why not go to cyber? Everybody's talking about cyber, right? Israel is a cyber country. Let's do cyber. Investor will throw money at us because we are doing cyber in Israel. We really try to understand if we have a skill set to support a specific segment. And we understand that for a micro fund, we can't really do it. There will be a bigger fund that will focus on the trends. They will focus on a specific segment. And the specific segment we identify is the business model. So recurring revenue, how to take a product and basically making sure that they can try to build a scalable engine that will we will bring money. You will know.
But all VCs focus on that. So I'm trying to understand why that was what you answered yourself when you decided. Not to niche down like that. Why do you feel like your niching down is the expertise on business model and scale? I suppose. I mean, that's the business model of a VC, right?
Right. But I think that we didn't feel that we have a significant specific value just in fintech, just in cyber, just in ed tech. And I think that once we understand that we don't really focus on the actual product. We need to understand the unit economics because we don't have enough expertise in a specific niche. So we didn't really think that we can shine in a specific segment. And again, the trends are different, right? Today is cyber, tomorrow is fintech. Yesterday it was HR tech. We don't want to follow this trend. And if the fintech will suddenly suffer from bad reputation or lack of companies, we will dry up, right? We won't have enough fuel to run this engine. So we decided that we will keep to the basic. We know how to help startup at the beginning. in our background. We will try to reduce the dependency on a specific segment and try to go all across. And if you look at our portfolio, you can see that the business model is very, very sticky, but the segment is different, right? We did music tech. We don't know anything about music. I'm a very bad musician. But when you see a product that can make sense for someone, you sell something to someone that gives them value, right? And he is willing to pay for it. So if that works and it's big enough, and you know, and you have the plan in your head how to scale it, we don't care about the actual segment. You know, all the segments are you can bring articles that say this segment will grow 10x in the next 20 years. It makes sense, but it can change. So we really decided we are not going to stick to a specific segment. We're just making sure that we will invest in something that we know how to help with. So maybe the outliers will be, I don't know, medical tech that we don't know anything about. But if it makes sense and we can help them a little bit, that's fine. But let's stick to the basic. We find a team. We understand the business model. We understand the product. We understand the market size. What it is less important.
So I got a question. So you said, first, let's talk about the music. So
yeah,
I saw that, like, you talked about 2025 being really strong in music tech.
I'm not sure if it was. It was. I think that.
Or like a new trend. Sorry.
It was a new trend. Yeah.
So what does that mean? Because like Joey Tunes is like there for like 10 years. Like what's getting new now? Why is 2025?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. I think that the Gen AI area that we are living in right now, trying to penetrate every aspect of our life, right? And I think one of the big challenges that we are facing in 2024, 2025 is this new thing that nobody really understands to the end how it's going to, we know it's there to stay, right? And we see so many different kind of, I don't think that we saw any company that doesn't have AI in its name in the past, I don't know, 24 months, right? Everything is AI. And we try to understand what does it mean? What kind of segment of or industry is going to affect? And I think that we saw, we came across music as one of the Gen AI aspect that basically can really help them, you know? It's there. There are so many capabilities to create music now very, very quickly, right? You don't need a massive studio to create music anymore, right? Like YouTube did in the past for a musician, right? Now it's for it's given the ability to try something very, very quickly. You don't need a huge knowledge at anything. And music felt like something that made sense. So you need to keep, you know, you need to keep the music. At the end of the day, you are selling something that people need to like, right? And if it won't be good, it won't last. So it's very easy to create songs with Gen AI. Somebody write the lyrics, somebody write the music behind it, and you can produce something. But we understand that we felt that that in this area, it's so unstructured, and it's an industry that nobody really touched in so many years. There might be a good opportunity to bring technology into music, and again, try not to damage it or ruin it, right? One of the companies that we invested in, which basically tried to create a virtual musician. They're not trying to do everything electronically, but they're trying to imitate the brain of a musician. So it's not bringing another guitar to the table. It's bringing a specific guitarist that will play along with your own music. Well, this was a refreshing approach. So we understand that this company is looking at it properly. This specific vision felt right. You're not trying to go into a very red ocean of virtual instruments. You're bringing new, refresh, deep tech ability, trying to imitate a specific artist and give him the ability to create another, let's say, like a, you know, identical twin that can duplicate the music. So there was something very refreshing, something very unique, and something very nice about how they approach this opportunity.
But you live and breathe business models. So you saw this, and that sounds exciting creatively, and sort of replicating the premise of language models and sort of taking it to a creative ability to also understand the characters of sound, I suppose. But how do you monetize that?
This is a great question, because this is exactly it. We find a good vision and notion, and which let's talk business, right? How you are going to monetize it? And this is the question on the table for the past time. Who we are going to approach? We are going to go to the high end, big enterprise, selling it to big studios, or go lower to the actual users, right? They want to play, or they want to play with, I don't know, Jimi Hendrix. I want to play with Jimi Hendrix, right? I won't have the ability, because it's not part of the not with us for many years, right? And if I have the ability to duplicate it, who is going to pay for it? It's going to be the professional. And this is a discussion, how we are going to first get the data and get the feeling of the user. What is the quickest way to approach or get into the revenue stream? Put it on as a feature, put it on a marketplace, how we are going to price it. It's going to be a freemium kind of model. It's going to be a tokenized model that you have some kind of a token that you can use for free, and then you need to buy more. This is the exact discussion that we are having. That we have a black box that creates something to someone. Now let's try to understand the actual value. And this is it. It's exactly how we are going to we are working with them to find the business model behind.
And you have to be with your ear to the ground. You have to understand the competition. And add to that that with AI moving so exponentially, you also have to keep being a predictor of where this is evolving, both at a competition level, but also with respect to what's happening behind the scenes with AI changing the game altogether. So how are you able to sort of get your anchors in this and be able to say, okay, this is an indication? Is it paying users? What is it? What do you cling to?
So paying users is one thing. I think that we at the beginning, because the volume and the revenue is not always the main thing, right? Willingness to pay something is more important. Finding the right pricing is not very crucial. We need to make sure that we are not blocking revenue stream. We are finding a price that at the very early journey of the company, users or potential customers will be willing to pay, even if it's not the full potential. I think I define the engagement with the product, right? We put it out and we want to see people using it. So engagement with the product, to see how people use the product, if it's going to be part of their day-to-day or weekly, or they just try it once and that's it. Who is going to use it? Is the average Joe that have a guitar and want to play and master it, or maybe a little bit more professional, or the people that are trying to build a professional journey around it? So we are playing with it, but we're trying again to make sure that all those tests bring us to a specific stage that we identify the customers. We know the range of the value it creates. We know the range of the pricing that we can charge for it, and then we're starting to show the beginning of the product market fit. We understand there is some kind of move there, and we start to identify if it's the right one and how fast it can grow.
I suppose there's also an aspect of to speak in the in the language of Clayton Christensen, of disruptive innovation, figuring out, and especially in an era of AI, if you're talking about sustainable innovation, where you're sort of improving something and building upon current innovations, or if this is a new market, for like you know, with Henry Forbes, horses versus cars. So I think in this era, it's very confusing to also understand your identity in that respect. If you're now building upon something or creating a complete new market out of nothing, reinventing an industry.
That is correct. I think that it's very vague these days because everything is AI and everything is an agent that can do something that can be. It's either yesterday it was a platform, and now it's an agent that doing everything, right? And I think that if we reflect back to, let's say, 2 years ago, I think that we can identify portfolio companies that if they were coming today with the same idea, we would say, no, it's too late, guys. This is a red ocean on steroids. There will be so, even if you are unique, the noise in the market wouldn't give you the opportunity. You might have a great technology behind it, but everybody is saying that they can do it, right? Why you are so different? Why you are better? Even if you are better, you need to make sure that your voice will be heard and be above this noise. So it's. I think that this ability of starting very quick, but failing very quick, gives them the ability to play with different opportunities and different ways to approach this market. If you are creating a new market, we have the option to, with very low development power, try different things we couldn't try before.
How much are your portfolio companies on top of AI agents and experimenting with them and working the notion, at least, into their business models these days?
So I think that it's a good question. I think that we have a founder space when we help our founders with new initiative in the market today. So one of our CEOs is going to present basically to our founders this week the ability to use different AI tools to improve their progress, either development or marketing or whatever. We feel that, you know, it's very noisy right now. We need to make sure that we understand exactly what is an agent that can be duplicated very quickly, and we see it on a daily basis. Even, you know, same kind of idea, different teams on the same day. Fintech is very, very crowded there today. We see agents that trying to replace accounting or lawyering or HR agent. And again, if you're not there with a product that works, and it's not just a wrapper around ChatGPT or any other Gen AI engine, you won't survive. You will be replaced, and it will be very, very challenging or extremely hard to maintain the value with the noise around it. So I think that we didn't figure it out yet, but I think that this is something that sits in every discussion that we have. What is a unique a proposition that either create a new market or optimize an existing one, and what is something that, you know, will be replaced tomorrow morning with another product just because Gen AI can disguise low technology with some kind of quick MVP.
And also just the incumbents who are able to come in and crush a technology that's not really creating a new market.
Yeah. Yeah, and then again, the value behind it, you know, Gen AI kind of change everything, but when you deep dive into it, you see that the quality of the outcome is not very, very stable right now, right? So you need to understand exactly how to harness it and not kind of get confused by it. And again, we spend a lot of time to understand exactly where everything is going. We we tend not to go with the trends. And, you know, after the big title, like SaaS is dead, and there will be a lot of a unicorn with only one employee. It's all nice, and maybe it will happen. But coming up with this hard message that everything is changed and nothing is going to be the same, it's not there, right? It's not there yet. There is a lot of things that will happen, and we will learn later on what works and what doesn't. And again, we're in a venture capital world, so nothing is assured or confirmed.
So, Lior, just to get an example and a sense of how you think and how you approach investing in that context, let's take, for example, Vribbit and Tom Livne. So what did you find relevant there? Was it charisma? What did you see there that hooked you?
So Vribbit is a great the great example of a company that we invested very, very early. You see what AI kind of did to companies like Vribbit that, you know, a few years ago, to approach this kind of market, you needed to understand the market, the opportunity. You needed to build significant deep tech technology around it to understand the market. And I think that when we saw Tom back then with his new vision, how to solve this obstacle, how to get you this 100% quality that was needed in few markets and few use cases. We decided this is a team vision, a big market, and probability to overcome this market back then with a new approach, and he did it. They build a technology. They find this is the focus we are talking about. Found the right use cases and segment of the business that this product is required to. When you need this 100% or close to 100%. Quality very quickly. So they did a combination of the significant technology platform with the last mile, the human last mile. And a great opportunity to discuss these new challenges that they have because of the new Gen AI and how Gen AI can bring let's say challenge the deep tech that they have with new, simple, quick solutions.
Because they were the new market in a sense.
Exactly. They built a new market, new level of quality that they put in the market. And now, when yesterday you had to build a huge company with a significant human in the loop to do it, now you have the ability to try and overcome with a simple solution that doesn't require hundreds of millions in investment to create a huge platform. You can try to build it.
But back then there was a moat.
Exactly, there was a moat. The team was with the right background. Charisma is one of the qualities that in founders that we are looking at. Tom proved it, right? He managed to build a big company, recruit enough investment and funding to this journey to make sure that they will last and they will be able to. Face any challenges. And again, back then, money was the issue, right? If you have challenge and you need to overcome it, you will need to spend a lot of money to solve it, which is different today. So I think that this is a great example of a company that started with a moat in the right time, but maybe today it doesn't have that kind of potential.
Fascinating. And we have no idea really where this is heading, but we can guess.
We can try to guess and we can think that we have the ability to guess.
And then reality will happen.
Yeah. And then something will happen if it's connected to a new technology or connected to a new political challenge, or it's connected to, I don't know, half of your team need to go to war, right? It's you don't know what is going to happen. And I think that this is the world that we are working in. Which the you know, the Israeli market kind of excel or suffer from, depends on where you are looking at.
Yeah, and how you look at it. Lior, what would you say your superpower is?
Well, it's a big question. I think the superpower would be trying to trying to stay focused in this, you know, high headwinds coming in. Try not to lose your core vision, if even if it's being challenged on a daily basis, and making sure that, you know, you will try to stay calm, take educated decisions anyway, anywhere, you know, regardless what this world throwing at you, and trying to really not get into panic, try to figure it out calmly is a superpower I have.
I think it's also a skill, right?
Yeah, you can master it, right? We are trying to master uncertainty with the fun. I think this is it. Trying to master uncertainty. Uncertainty is there. We need to make sure that we will be able to overcome it with the capability that we have. We don't have a crystal ball that will tell us everything, right? So we need to make sure that we can be prepared, or at least plan a way to face these challenges, regardless what challenges they will be.
What is your kryptonite?
Yeah, it's a good question as well. I think our kryptonite in this world is it's the unknown. It's the unknown that we need to put in everything, and the commitment that we need to bring in. You know, everything can be a kryptonite in these days. You don't know where it will come, right? You don't really know what your soft spot. It can be tomorrow morning, so many different things. So I think that there's no one kryptonite ahead of us. There's so many.
So 80 episodes in, but a conclusion that we've reached much before is that typically the superpower is also the kryptonite, and it's no different here.
I agree. It's the same. It's a different, let's say, it's different packaging to the same item.
We wish you that those mental strategies that enable you to thrive and persist within uncertainty will keep leading you to the more verbits and the more successes in your path. But above all, to also be able to do what you love. So it's cool to see a person that listens to themselves and doesn't settle on comfort. Whatever comfort means for you, by the way, because I'm not sure people would necessarily describe what you describe as comfort as comfortable. But it's great to see people in tune with themselves.
Great. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's all for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Also, if you have a moment, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on the platform you're listening to. This will help others find our show. And as always, if you know anyone who you think would enjoy our podcast, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back as usual on the first of the month.
Real life.
Superpowers.
Up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
It's alive!
Real life.
Superpowers.